So klingt Weihnachten bei Rewe. Jetzt festlich sparen bei deinem Weihnachtseinkauf. Diese Woche bei Rewe. Frischenetz Sekt, verschiedene Sorten, je 0,75 Liter Flasche nur 3,49 Euro. Und außerdem Emira Klettscheiben, Natur, je 200 Gramm Packung nur 2,22 Euro. Sichere dir außerdem bis zum 24. Dezember 10% Rewe Bonusguthaben auf Weihnachtssüßwaren. Nur in deiner Rewe-App. Frohe Weihnachten. Festlich sparen bei Rewe. Dein Markt.
Welcome to the State of the Race. It is Friday, June 21st, 24 days until the Republican National Convention, 59 days till the Democratic National Convention, and 137 days until the general. Coming up in this episode, we know not everyone will vote in the upcoming election, but if they did, who would win? We'll get into that. There's evidence that Trump's conviction may wind up helping him. And we have one really strange decision by Biden for the debate I want to talk about. But first, let's get into the key metrics. And now we are getting to the point in the campaign cycle where multiple sites are releasing their election models, who will win the election in November. 538, kind of the most famous one. To give you a quick background on that, Nate Silver's no longer there. He was the guy who started this site a long time ago. The new guy who is there is a guy, I think he was from The Economist a while ago, had a model over there, which was super, super pro-Hillary Clinton. So what you're going to see from 538 this cycle may wind up being more pro-Democrat than you're used to out of 538. And I know a lot of people think, well, 538, it's tied to ABC News, and we used to be the New York Times, and so it's sort of left-leaning. But, you know, Nate Silver's, you know, a bit of a contrarian at times. You can't always predict him. Anyway, long story short, 538 now has Biden with a 50% chance of winning, 50% of winning over Donald Trump with their simulation model. DDHQ, along with The Hill, has a model out as well. Trump at 58% in their chance to win. And the prediction markets are always interesting to look at. Polymarket is one of them, where you can bet on the outcomes of various events, people putting their money where their mouth is. This basically tells you more about what people really believe about how the outcome will come out. Right now, Donald Trump is winning, 56% chance of a victory in November in the prediction markets. Quick candidates updates. It's some interesting stuff going on in the financial aspect of this. We have a few big donations. We have one from the Winklevoss twins. Now, you know the Winklevoss twins, the guys who basically invented Facebook, brought on Mark Zuckerberg to help him out, who then seemingly stole his idea, allegedly, is there still pending litigation on that? Allegedly stole the idea for Facebook and then made a lot of money on it. And they were both kind of like mocked in the movie version of this story, The Social Network, as kind of like bumbling dopes and, you know, entitled guys. It's interesting, though, the author of the book that led to that movie is Ben Mezrich. He wrote another book later on called The Bitcoin Billionaires about the Winklevoss twins and really changed his tune on them and basically said, hey, actually, the more we've looked into them, they're not bumbling fools. They are really pretty smart guys that have been at the beginning of two real revolutions in our country. Early on Facebook, I mean, really the earliest on Facebook, and very, very early on Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. They started their own company. They made tons and tons of money just off of that. The reason I bring that up is they are donating a couple of million dollars to Donald Trump and his campaign apparatus. This is mainly because Democrats are so anti-Bitcoin, but it is notable. Obviously, the cash is helpful. And Timothy Mellon, who is a... they call him a reclusive billionaire in the New York Times. He has now been a major donor to the Donald Trump super PAC. Now, he had earlier supported RFK Jr., but he has now given $50 million, one of the largest single disclosed gifts in history, to a pro-Trump group. And if you think about what's interesting here, because now all these donations and many of the donations that have poured in since the conviction, what we've seen is the money gap has narrowed. In fact, Donald Trump seems to have more money on hand in his actual campaign than Joe Biden at this point. This has not been the case up until very recently. And I think you can look at the conviction and the polls and say, well, it looks like maybe the polls moved slightly toward Joe Biden, when it comes to the post-conviction polling. We'll have a little bit more on that coming up. But that is probably going to be fleeting. On the other side of that, you might have some enthusiasm gained by base voters who are angry about the conviction. And maybe those two things cancel each other out. What isn't factored into that, though, is the massive amount of money raised by Donald Trump in the aftermath of this. Nine figures in total amount, which is a huge amount of money. I mean, like, all things being equal, if you can get an extra $100 million, $200 million, $300 million out of a campaign event, it's usually pretty good. Who knows what that money will do? They have to use it intelligently. We will see if they do that. Next up, we have a very strange decision by Joe Biden leading up to the debate. And I don't know, maybe you can message me at Studios America on Twitter/X when you if you have any ideas. But basically, there's a coin flip. And if you know anything about football, you go into overtime, you have this opportunity to make a decision. You flip the coin and you have the decision to make. You can either choose which end zone you defend, which could be important in some circumstances, particularly a very windy circumstance. You might pick which end zone to defend. But generally speaking, like if you're in a dome, it makes no difference at all which side you go to. The other one is who gets the ball first, who gets the ball second. Almost everybody chooses that option because it's much, much more important. Well, a similar thing happened with the debate. There was a coin toss, and the Biden campaign won the coin toss, and they had a decision to make. They could either choose the side of the stage their podium was on, left or right. They use the word podium even though they're sitting, but this is the term they used. So is it the left podium or the right podium? I don't know. To me, a decision that really makes almost no difference. And the other one is, do you make the final statement in closing statements or do you go first in closing statements? Well, Joe Biden, oddly, with that decision to be made, chose the right podium, leaving Donald Trump to have the final word in the debate. A very, very strange tactical choice. I mean, you know, if Donald Trump says something you think is crazy, you'd have a chance to answer it in your closing statement. You'd have the final impression to voters be your voice and your vision. Instead, now it's going to be Donald Trump's vision, but Joe Biden will be on the right side of the stage, for at least on the right side of your TV screen. So, kind of a strange moment. I don't really understand the strategy. Maybe they think his closing statement's going to be so bad they don't want to leave the American people with that impression. I don't know what they're thinking there, but a very fascinating thing. And if you have any thoughts, definitely let me know on Twitter. Finally, the other candidate in this race, RFK Jr., his percentages are dropping as third party candidates tend to do, but it's not going to help him that he will not be in the debate on June 27th. CNN says he did not meet the June 27th debate requirements. This included a polling minimum, which I don't think he hit. He needed to get four polls over 15%. I don't think he hit the fourth one. That was not actually in the article because he definitely didn't get to the 270 electoral votes. He needed to have enough states officially on the ballot to get to 270 electoral votes. Basically, he had to be a candidate that could, in theory, win if he was if the election were held today. Now, what's difficult about this, and look, I'm very much on the record, I'm not a RFK Jr. fan at all. I don't like him. I don't like most of the things he stands for. Some of them are good. I mean, I'm not totally against all of his policies. You know, as we mentioned with Bitcoin, he's actually pretty good on Bitcoin. I don't know how real that is, but he says he's good on Bitcoin. The issue, though, I mean, the guy's polling between 6 and 12% in a lot of these polls. To me, that is a high enough bar to be able to get your voice on stage. I think he should get into at least this first debate, in my opinion. That's just my opinion. But when you look at the rules, they are completely set up against him having any chance of getting into the debate. One of the things that they mention in the story is this: the campaign has successfully collected enough signatures to potentially get Kennedy's name printed on the ballot in several states, including those with significant signature requirements like Texas and New York. So he went through all the trouble to get all these signatures, to get them turned in. But what CNN is saying, well, they haven't officially said yes. They haven't officially accepted those signatures. So we can't give you credit for those states. Now, I understand that. I mean, someone could just give hundreds of thousands of fake signatures in theory. But most of these states haven't certified the petitions at all. And they won't do so until much later in the summer. So it was impossible for him to be in this debate the whole time. He, even if he turned in all the signatures, they weren't going to certify them, so he couldn't possibly get to 270. Really just silly. I mean, nonsense. Like, if you don't want the guy in the debate, just tell him he's not in the debate. I mean, to come up with these fake rules and then make them impossible standards for him to hit, I just think is just, you know, wrong and silly, frankly. Finally, let's go to today's focus as we move through the state of the race. And this is an interesting situation when it comes to a dynamic that's existed for a long time between Democrats and Republicans. Forever. You could always depend on one thing most of the time, which was Republicans would do better among likely voters than they would do registered voters or all adults. There's three ways a lot of times these polls will be taken by pollsters, and they'll say, okay, hey, here's all the adults, everyone 18 plus that could theoretically vote. What is the percentage there? And sometimes they break them down to registered voters. Okay, there's a lot of adults that aren't registered voters. We're going to throw them out of the mix. Then they would have a whole other group that were likely voters. And this, there's a little art to this one, right? A little art to figuring out what you believe is a likely voter. But pollsters are pretty good at sussing this out most of the time. And generally speaking, it would favor Republicans. And let me give you a few ways that they would look at this. They would say, well, okay, it's 2024 election. Did you vote in 2022? An off-year election, midterm election, probably somebody's going to be pretty engaged. If you're going to go in an off-year election, you're probably going to go back and vote in the presidential election. So if you voted in 2022, you're pretty likely to actually come back in 2024. Another way they would do it is looking back at the past presidential elections. Well, if you voted in 2020, yeah, you're probably pretty likely to vote in 2024. Another one they would do is maybe like, hey, did you vote in the midterm election and you just voted in this primary election? You're so engaged you went to the primaries. Well, then you're really a likely voter, right? And then there's sort of everybody else. You know, maybe you voted in an election a long time ago, you've never voted before. And those things are, you know, usually they're people who could vote. They might show up and sometimes a candidate can activate them, but generally speaking, they're not reliable voters because they don't show up a lot. Well, this is the breakdown of those groups, and I think it's fascinating. If you voted in a 2022 primary election, so you're talking about people who are super highly engaged. You're people who, these are people who are, you know, really, really into it, right? Like, they're so into it, they're showing up to primary elections. If you look at just those people, Joe Biden leads by 5%, 49 to 44. If you go down to the next most likely group, these are people who voted in the 2022 midterm elections, but not in a primary. Joe Biden leads them by 3 points, 46 to 43. Now, the next group are people who are among voters who voted in the 2020 election, okay? Maybe they voted in the 2022, but generally speaking, they voted in the 20, one of the two elections they voted in. Well, that is Donald Trump with a small lead, 44 to 42. And finally, the interesting thing here is the people with no voting history. These are people who are not particularly engaged. They've never voted in an election before. What you see there, 49 to 35, a Trump lead by 14 points. Well, what does that mean? When you add up all of those groups, if everyone voted, really for the first time that I can remember, Donald Trump actually would win here. A Republican would outperform among all voters, 46 to 44. Again, this is a good thing with a big asterisk involved. And I've talked about this before. We've gone over some of the similar polling a few weeks ago. The asterisk here is, you have had a Republican Party that has attempted to engage voters like this forever. These are younger voters. These are minority voters. These are voters who are not particularly engaged. Some would call them low information voters. Many of these voters were very difficult for Republicans to engage. They just could not get them motivated, could not get them excited to come to the polls. Donald Trump has changed that dynamic. He is doing something that no other Republican could do. The question is, is there a cost to this? Because if you have a situation where you are depending on voters who have never shown up before, well, guess what? they might not show up. And if you're depending on those voters, especially when all the other groups are pretty close and you have a massive lead when it comes to these non-engaged voters, there is a danger there. There is a potential problem that could be there long term. We will see if that changes. I will say a lot of these voters will get engaged as we get down really into campaign season. Summer ends, debates happen, conventions happen. The news coverage is going to be focused almost entirely on the presidential debate. So maybe they'll come around for Donald Trump. We will see here in the coming weeks. And finally, we end the podcast today with the totally made up, I'm just guessing scorecard feature that we do at the end of the podcast. And the two ways we look at this is, if the election was held today, who would win? By the way, the election will not be held today. But if it were held today, I believe Trump is at a 68% chance of winning the presidential election. Very good, not insurmountable. Could lose, but a 68% chance of winning. However, if the election is held when the election is held, I still have Trump as a favorite, but a slight favorite right now, 53% for Donald Trump. It's close. This is a close election. We've talked about it many, many times. It doesn't feel close at times. It really doesn't. Right now, in the Real Clear Politics average, Donald Trump has a half point lead. Joe Biden has been winning national polls recently, though. And that is not how the election is decided, of course. Swing states are going to be much more important. But those leads in swing states are narrow. They were mostly within the margin of error, and a lot is going to happen in the next 5 months. So while you can be optimistic if you happen to be a Trump supporter, I wouldn't be cocky, because this thing is still really close. Thanks for listening to State of the Race. We'll have more leading up to the debate next week. Talk to you then.
Persil sorgt schon seit 1907 für tiefenreine Wäsche, auch bei den Johnsons, oder Anna?
Das stimmt. Sogar meine Oma hat schon mit Persil gewaschen.
Und als Dankeschön für über 100 Jahre Vertrauen gibt's jetzt bis zu 15 Euro Rabatt auf unser Bestes.
Das mit der roten Schleife.
Genau, made in Germany. Mehr Infos auf unserbestes.persil.de.
Wenn es tiefenrein ist, ist es Persil. Unser Bestes.